Welcome back to Clinician's Brief Partner Podcast. I'm your host, registered veterinary technician, Becky Mosser, and today's episode is brought to you by Elanco's DVM Dermatology Portfolio. We have Dr. Dan Carey joining us today to talk about all things dermatology. We are so excited to welcome you, Dr. Carey. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Becky. It's a delight to be here.
Well, I'm excited about this conversation because we know derm issues are important. It's summer. I live in the humidity. But so before I throw the barrage at you, tell us a little bit about where you're from, how you ended up in Bayer. Just give us a little of your background.
Well, I am a veterinarian, University of Missouri graduate. I've been in just about everything a veterinarian can legally, morally, and ethically do, which includes small animal, large animal. I had an avian practice for a number of years. I managed a pathology lab. But I spent the bulk of my career in dog and cat nutrition research for what was then the Iams Company, became Procter & Gamble, and now is Mars. But I left them a number of years ago, and I've been with Bayer now for 12 years in the scientific affairs side of their business, which means we try to help educate veterinarians, pet owners, as well as our own internal employees on not only our products, but on the health and welfare of dogs and cats.
I really love that sentiment, honestly, because I think sometimes we feel like, oh, you're in industry, you're not practicing anymore, you're not learning anymore, you're only up on your products. Like, we maybe don't get enough credit to the amount of learning that happens behind the scenes in industry.
Well, selfishly, I love being in industry because I am expected to keep abreast of things. And I am expected to be maybe not an expert like a board certified orthopedic surgeon or dermatologist like we're going to talk today, but in veterinary medicine as a clinician. And what's interesting is that I did leave industry for a while, some years ago. And when I was in practice then, seeing 20 to 25 clients a day, I really felt that I was missing an opportunity to talk with and affect far more people. Now, that's why I said that sounds kind of selfish, but it is so true that veterinarians in industry have an impact far more than what one might expect.
Before we get too much further into that, because you mentioned kind of going back and forth, my favorite question for all of my guests is, were you a lifelong veterinarian or did that come along later for you in life? When did you know this was the direction you were headed?
Well, I've been a lifelong animal advocate, having been totally engrossed with animals as a child, and thinking that I was going to get into raptor rehabilitation. I was a falconer as a high school student, biology student as an undergrad. And I realized that raptor rehabilitation, as egalitarian as it may sound, is not going to pay a lot of bills. And I was introduced to veterinary medicine somewhat accidentally as a result of just a happy coincidence of meeting a veterinarian who said, hey, look, this is probably where you can funnel your interest. And it was that guidance that really helped me understand what profession I could put with my desires. So it's been there all along, but I never really defined it until I was perhaps later in my undergraduate years.
It's such an important reminder for us about influencing people around us, right? And how we can see people who have an interest and help and make sure they know about the veterinary industry. That helps us to, you know, create diversity and to, you know, build the profession, which is always suffering shortages. So I think that's amazing.
Isn't it so cool that sometimes people know what they want to do, but they don't know what that is? And that's
not
like doublespeak, but it's exactly what you said. And it is so fun to ask people to tell you more about that and then suddenly see the lights go on.
Yeah. Yeah. As a veterinary technician, I see that a lot because a lot of folks don't realize there are other options in vet school. So, well, clearly this podcast has taken a turn because I only now want to talk about falconry and how we can inspire people. So we might have to have you back for that conversation because I think Bayer would be upset if we don't dive into this dermatology conversation we're here for. And so this is going to be a three-part series on the dermatology workup and treatment. And it's funny because, you know, sometimes when I get these outlines, I'm like, dermatology again? Really? Are we going to look at this? And then we get these numbers. And what I find is dermatology topics are the ones they're reading, the ones they're listening to. Like, I feel like our GPs cannot get enough of dermatology. And I feel like they either love it and they want more, or they hate it and they're trying to learn. What's going on with that? Why do you think that is?
The interesting answer to that is probably the same answer for both situations. And first is that we see a lot of it. Regardless of which of the pet insurance company data you look at, I've looked at the Nationwide Pet Insurance over the years and the Trupanion Insurance. In fact, they had a report that just came out last month, and it's always showing dermatology in the top couple spots of reasons people take their dogs or cats to veterinarians. Now, dermatology typically affects dogs more than cats. And today I suspect that we'll probably end up skewing our talk towards dogs more than cats. Doesn't mean cats don't have the problems. But because we see so many cases of that, we either get very comfortable with it or we get very uncomfortable with it. And that sounds kind of silly, but the outcomes are difficult to predict. And I think there's a lot of opportunity to think about why that is. You know, for example, clients often balk at cost, and that's no revolution there, a revelation. And you know, when they start balking at cost, we have to start trimming some of the diagnostics, some of the treatments, some of the follow-up perhaps, that would make it easier for us to be confident in the outcome. And so our confidence goes down a little bit. And that's a challenge. And certainly, as with all the cases we treat just about, there's an element of home care that we rely upon. And that's variable too. Some clients are really diligent and follow the directions. Other clients don't.
Yeah, the compliance issue, right? That it's hard because you're like, my confidence is affected by whether or not things are happening at home and the honesty that we're getting from our clients. So it's kind of an amazing point that you make there. And, you know, I guess too, I agree. A lot of it is just that we see so much of it, whether you love it or hate it. But it also seems to me like the latest and the greatest treatments just change so much that it's hard to keep up with it. And so I kind of wonder if it's part of the love-hate relationship around dermatology.
I suspect it is. And we see all the time changes in science. And as we go through the last 5 or 6 months of the coronavirus episode, we have a fabulous example of how the best science of the moment may change in a week. And so we start to then second guess, and we default to some of the more comfortable older things. But yet science constantly moves forward, and maybe not as fast in veterinary dermatology as we've seen with the coronavirus, but in my career, and I won't give away when I graduated in 1978, but we've seen huge changes in veterinary dermatology. Let me give you the one that is most amazing, and that is atopy. And of course, you've given the whole atopy, atopic dermatitis talk to hundreds of clients to explain things. But when I was taught about atopy, it was an inhaled allergen that magically caused dermal signs, itching, eruptions, subsequent skin infections, etc. And we'd all say, well, how does it get from the nose to the skin? It does. Inflammatory cells are there. That's all hooey. It was the best we knew at the time. But now we know that this is contact with the skin. It's a dermal reaction. Atopy is not inhaled. Now, there may be inhalant allergies that dogs get, of course. But what we had classically called atopy, we've learned over the years, and it's only been the last 15, 20 years that we've understood that it's a dermal exposure, not a respiratory exposure. We look at other things like seborrhea. Again, not too many years ago, we go back to the 90s, and primary seborrhea in dogs was considered a major disease problem. And as research has continued and papers have been written, we learn that primary seborrhea is probably very infrequent. A very good dermatologist that I know says it may be 5% or less of derm cases that we see. And when we see seborrhea, it's probably secondary. So these kinds of things evolve and definitely undermine our confidence just a bit. And then you throw on top of this, drug therapies change, the availability of products changes, competing products make claims and statements that cause us to wonder which direction we should go. And we fall into a pattern. I have talked to lots of veterinarians who willingly admit that they're in a habit. They say, I've got a habit. This is the way I treat otitis externa. This is the way I treat what we have called acral lick granulomas. This is the way I treat blah, blah, blah. And I said, well, why don't we change? And they said, well, it's going to take me a while to undo my habit. And there's an old saying that, you know, the difference between being in the groove and in the rut is the outcome. And so sometimes we get in a rut and we're happy with an outcome that may not be the best, but it's so much easier than trying to keep up.
So, I mean, it makes sense to me, but I can't help but kind of think like, you know, fine, we find new causes for these, but skin, right? Like, I mean, we can find new surgical techniques that are faster or less invasive, but I mean, the skin doesn't change just because we figured out, you know, the causative agent, right? The condition, the physiopathology looks the same. So I guess it makes me interested in just sort of like, why is it always changing? And is it necessary for it to always change? And, you know, are there still some like old go-tos that are just incredibly relevant, or are we in a rut, you know?
Yeah, and that's such a good observation, because, you know, answers are easy. Questions are hard. And asking those questions that challenge what we are currently doing are among the hardest questions to ask. And we've got some very bright dermatologic researchers that have come along in the last couple of decades, and they've asked those tough questions. And one that I like particularly because of my nutrition background is the relationship of oral and topical linoleic acid. Now, we all know that linoleic acid is a required nutrient at a certain small level. And we always thought that it needed to be supplied through food. But then we found that if we put it in shampoos, for example, as safflower oil is a good source, we can actually get some penetration of that skin with that topically applied, quote, nutrient and have a benefit on that skin barrier. So when we think of things like that, it's something that we may have been doing for decades, putting safflower oil or corn oil or something like, you know, an oil in there, thinking that it made the skin or the coat look nice. We now know why it is doing that. And part of it is also some of the research that's gone on. And we know that in atopic dogs, for example, an enzyme responsible for fatty acid lipid metabolism, delta 60 saturase, is compromised. And so now all of a sudden we have a topically applied safflower oil that has an explanation for why it might be beneficial. It's just, it's so cool when something we've been doing for a long time all of a sudden may have relevance. And, you know, you mentioned the things that we've been doing for a long time and some don't change. Bathing is one of those things that comes to mind. We have forever said we need to bathe frequently. How frequently? Okay, so there's another question. But we've always recognized the benefit of cleaning the skin, cleansing it, removing oils that shouldn't be there in that secondary seborrhea that we were talking about, as well as moisturizing. And that moisturizing part starts to lead us to the skin barrier that we've all known about, but we haven't thought about it as much as we should have, perhaps. And this is where old therapies now perhaps have explanations that explain why we haven't abandoned them. So that skin barrier actually prevents water loss, hence moisturizing becomes important, and the word we've used for decades now has an explanation. But the skin barrier also protects from external assaults, either as allergens or microorganisms, and it also has an effect on the turnover of the skin. So some of the things we've been doing for a long time have been helping, but we may not have known exactly the reasons for it.
I mean, I think that makes a lot of sense, and it gives validation, right? So you feel better about doing those things because you have science to back it up. And
excellent word, validation.
Yeah, yeah, it's super important. Okay, so I guess this brings me into the kind of the middle of this conversation, which is like, we know what gets them there, but then kind of what we're doing when they're there. And since we know it's very common and we know that it's not everybody's favorite thing, I kind of want to rewind it a little bit, because I like to talk about client expectations, but I think that client expectations should be set even like well before they get to the clinic. So when we're talking about dermatological visits, what can we do to set our clients up for success before they even ever get to the office?
That is probably the single most important thing we can do, really. And you recognize it, having been an educator in practice, or still are. And, you know, my role in educating people, I've had an opportunity to work with some very, very bright educators, teachers in all sorts of fields. And one of the things that they emphasize and that I summarize in three key points is what I think can answer your question, and then I can give a little more explanation how it pertains to dermatology. But we're working with adults, and adults need to know where you're going. In other words, they need to know what the end game looks like. What's the goal? The second thing, it has to be relevant to them. They have to understand why and how it fits. And that sounds easier than sometimes it is, because it requires distilling some of the highly technical stuff that we know into a language that clients understand and can say, I get it. And then the third thing, and it goes back to our discussion earlier about our dependence on the follow-up by the pet owner in their home, is we need to engage the owner. One of the things that reminds me of engaging the owner is something that a public speaker named Simon Sinek has been saying for a number of years that I think is just a fabulous idea. And it starts with why. And if the pet owner knows why we're doing it, and that's not so they get better. So they get better as an outcome. The why is, if we are going to use a bath product, a shampoo, we need to do it twice a week for the next 3 weeks. And the reason we need to do it twice a week is because if we don't clean the skin, some of this debris will build up. And that can not only be a substrate for bacteria or yeast, but it can also cover up any problems that we want to see quickly. It also makes the animal a lot more appealing to be around, etc. You know, so the why of the bathing starts to become really important, and then they can understand why not. So knowing those three things, then we get to another part of education, and it sounds like I'm talking, well, it is education. We're educating our clients because they have
100%.
Don't they?
Yeah.
How many times do we know of cases that have succeeded because they're a partner and they know why?
Oh, 100%, right? The compliance is everything, and it's in completely intertwined with that relationship. And I love that you're highlighting the why, because I keep saying that we have the most educated generation we've ever had up and coming, and their why is incredibly important to them. This is a questioning generation that is not questioning you as an individual or as an expert, but because they want an understanding that they're so used to getting in a lifetime of having knowledge at your fingertips always.
That's exactly right. And so when they call and they say, hey, my dog is scratching, we don't just say, okay, I'll give you an appointment next week at 10 a.m. We need to give them some pre-work. And this is like any good education program. If you come to class and you haven't read the chapter, it's not as meaningful. Now, I know we've all done that in our educational experience, but we need to start setting up that expectation. And so we can give them some of the things they need to be thinking about. We need to watch and see how often, where, when, start recording what they've been eating, what they've been doing, where they've been exposed. Is there anything new in the household? We give them a list, and there are plenty of lists out there that you can get to do this, but we need to give them some pre-work. So now they come prepared. They've invested. They've been engaged. Second thing we need to do is set an expectation that this is not a 15-minute vaccination physical exam. Thank you for stopping by. We'll see you next year or in 3 years or whatever. We need to remind them that this is a dermatologic case and it's not going to fit into our normal time slot. Our derm cases typically take fill in the blank for your particular practice, but it's not unusual for a dermatologic visit in a general practice to take 45 to 60 minutes, and they need to be prepared for that. Along with that comes a cost. This is a special investigation. We have got to do some diagnostics. So now they're starting to be prepared for what's coming. And in the end, we hopefully will have them set up so that they know there may be diagnostics, there may be diet recommendations, there may be medications, there may be bathing, there may be parasite control, and there's certainly no bathing before they come in because otherwise they wash away everything we're looking for. But we're starting to set up that dermatology skin problems do not occur in a vacuum, that this is the sum of so many things that we have to take into consideration.
So important, that client expectation. And, you know, I love that you said that about not bathing them because it seems so obvious. But I have had so many clients bathe their dog because they're embarrassed, right? They don't want them to come. They're like, oh, they're so stinky. I don't want you to smell them. Or I've even had owners before they came to the emergency room because a dog like pooed on themselves or something. And I'm like, why is your dog soaking wet? And they're like, I washed it. But I'm like, what? Okay. And you know, honestly, even I had a dog who had a skin infection. She's my 13-year-old old girl. And I called the pet sitter because I was worried because she was super icky. She was like crusty and oily and gross, and it doesn't cure overnight. Like you said, like this was a process, and I was afraid she wouldn't give her the love that she needed because she was icky. There's a real emotional factor here, isn't there?
There really is. And that quality of life interaction is something that we have to take very seriously. And it gets us back to some of the why that we were talking about also. And if we can help those clients understand that if we do these things, that they will get back to that quality of life, that interaction, that relationship that you were describing. And it makes it a little easier for them to understand. Because when you start getting into multiple modalities, you know, like I was saying with the diet and whatever, you're starting to add some cost here. And so many times we are thinking, there was a wonderful study. Let me take a minor tangent here. There was a wonderful study that AHA did and published 13 years ago, 2007, in which they asked veterinarians and pet owners a whole bunch of questions. But one of them that sticks in my mind is they asked clients if they thought the veterinarian was trying to reach into their pocketbook and pull out money that they didn't need to give up. 90%, or pretty close to that, 90% said, no, they're doing what they need to do. Interestingly, if we asked veterinarians the slightly altered question, and that question would be, how many of your clients think you're just taking money out of their pocketbook that they don't need to give you? Just about 90% of the veterinarians said, yeah, they all think I'm just trying to scam them. I'm just a shyster. So it's interesting that it's the exact opposite of what the clients said. And so what it says, especially when we get to these complex problems like dermatology, is that we need to offer them and explain to them all the pieces that need to go together, because we just don't have that magic answer. I can't wave my magic wand and say, get better, and bing, everything's better. So it starts to become a challenge if we haven't prepared the client for that.
Yeah, and I love that you talk about that too, in the sense it's so different, I think, from the human experience, right? So if I have some weird rash, or, you know, if I go to the dermatologist, they pretty much just like look at it and throw a little spray or a little cream or cut it out. Like, I feel like that's how they deal with just about anything I've ever encountered in the dermatologist. I also think that a lot of people don't go to the dermatologist. So they maybe don't have tons of issues with skin things. And most of the issues that they come across with skin, they can run to the pharmacy and handle. So I love that we have to set our clients up for success in understanding and preparing that there's going to be diagnostics involved, and to help our colleagues feel okay about doing that and just understanding it. It's a difference in how we present it, right? I love, and what I want to say too, I'm rambling at this point, to your point about this study, which I think is super interesting, is we only hear those bad ones, right? The reason, yes. I think the reason we think 90% think we're only robbing them or think that 90% think we're robbing them is because we really feel the one person who tells us we are. So if 100 of our clients in a day say, thank you so much, doc, thank you so much for everything you do. Oh, I really appreciate it. It's the one that says you're scamming me that we start to, that we really hold closest.
Isn't it odd that we all, and you're in the same boat, we're all in the veterinary profession together, and we probably feel the same way, that we remember those outliers and we forget that the bulk of our interactions are very successful. We as veterinarians, and this is my opinion, live for a narcotic hit. We are addicted to thank you. And when we don't hear thank you, as in the client you just described, we suddenly feel like we've run off the rails. I can recall back in my career, the cases where I failed. I don't remember all those wonderful cases that succeeded. Yeah. Yeah. That's terrible.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, it kind of gets into that. What are we going to do to help the client see this? And that educational process that you alluded to helps them see what the value is.
Okay. So we know the educational process is absolutely essential, right? Because we know compliance is going to equal patient outcome and all of those things. But at the same time, from like the medical standpoint, let's switch back over to being in the clinic. There are, you know, I feel like a lot of different ways to go about figuring out causes. And I think there can be a little bit of controversy or back and forth about, you know, how much of it is treating the cause and how much of it is treating the condition in front of us. So walk me through a little bit of your treatment algorithm and the prioritization over, you know, the daily treatment, the long-term treatment, the cause versus the problem.
Well, your question has hit the nail on the head. And that is that there may be a short-term solution, a mid-term solution, and a long-term solution, or there may be a short-term solution and everything's fine and rosy after that. So this is where the workup comes in. And a dermatologic workup is not just staring at the dog. Again, usually it's dogs. And deciding exactly what's wrong. Early in my career, I worked with a veterinarian that just impressed the heck out of me because he could walk into an exam room and say, boom, this is what it is. Here's what you need. This is our red paint for skin wounds of this kind. And off you go. Thank you for being here. I thought, wow, is that impressive? All he has to do is look at that dog and he knew exactly what to do. Well, I've been a little disillusioned over time because there is a lot we should be doing. And a derm workup, as we talked about in that extended exam time needed, requires a lot of diagnostics. And some of that diagnostic starts with the patient and the client and getting that good history. And the history is so important that we make certain we ask all the right questions, because in a DVM 360 survey that was done not just long ago this year, they found that over 50% of dog and cat owners had already tried something that they read about online, purchased perhaps online or in a retail outlet. All good intentions. You know, we're all being trained to work ourselves through our personal medical problems to try and reduce the impact on health costs. And so our insurance companies are saying, well, call the, you know, this, call that, talk the process, et cetera. It's filtering down into the veterinary side too. And pet owners, 50%, that's a lot, that have already tried something. And we need to make sure we hear about that, because just like you were saying earlier about people being embarrassed for bringing in a stinky dog, sometimes they're embarrassed to tell the veterinarian or the technician that I've already tried something and it didn't work. I know I should have come here first.
Yeah, that's a great point, right? They won't tell you. I did put some turpentine or something crazy on there.
Yeah. And then the physical exam starts to guide us a little bit. And, you know, we may need to do cytology, scrapings, tape preps, all good things. Staining of skin scrapings for bacterial fungal things. We may not need to do Gram stains right out of the gate. We may be able to do a DiffQuick just to see if it's rods or cocci or yeast. And that can guide us quite well without a huge expenditure. So that cytology becomes really, really good. But then there are cases where if what we see and hear tells us that it's possibly an allergy, then we start getting into our atopy and food allergy, et cetera, diagnostic arm, which may be different than if we've seen fleas or if we've seen what may be an immune-mediated disease erupting around the nasal plenum or something of that nature. And we may also have a systemic disease with dermatologic manifestations. So we need to start going down that route. And we may need to do CBCs, profiles, endocrine panels. We may even need to do some nutritional panels like for zinc or lipid metabolism because those things can have skin manifestations. So as we get into all of those aspects, there's a lot to be done.
You know, it is one of those things that we think about being, I think, either really fun. Like, I love diagnostics. I love the pharmacy. So, like, I love being a technician and getting to just kind of do the microscope work, figuring out the best, shampoos, treatments, coaching the client. I think I get the lucky kind of part of that. But what it makes me think about is the fact that the compliance, and I know we talked about setting them up for success and letting them know and all of those things. But let's be like realistic and experience what I feel like happens is, they go home with 2 full weeks of antibiotics, an e-collar, and a shampoo, right? And then they stop the antibiotics as soon as the skin looks better. They take the e-collar off that night because the dog was freaking out. He hated the food we gave him, so they stopped feeding it to him. And, well, I didn't really have time for the bath, so I only did like one. How do we work around the reality of that?
Well, that becomes a little more difficult. And one of the questions that I heard a veterinarian using, and this is not too many years ago, was, here's what typically happens after I send people home with problems like this. And then they describe exactly what you just described. And they ask the client, how do you want me to contact you in a week or one of my staff?
Yeah.
And not, do you want me, or we may give you a call, but how do you want me to contact you? Do you want me to write an email, send a text, phone? I'm not going to come to your door, but set up the expectation that there is going to be at least a verbal follow-up. There may need to be a physical follow-up. So I want to see you back here next week, same time, because we need to check on this. Otherwise, we know from experience that things don't always work out well. Set up something concrete.
I think we really underutilize the recheck.
We do. How many of us have ever been to a dentist anymore who doesn't set up our next appointment before we leave? It's almost unheard of. That profession has really done a great job of that. Many of our colleagues have too, Becky, but still, I think it's just as you said, underutilized.
Addressing your patient's most common skin issues doesn't have to be difficult. Elanco's hardworking DVM dermatology portfolio is streamlined to ease treatment selection. Each formulation offered is designed to work hard for your clinic and provide support for a range of issues. All right. So that brings me to our Keep It Brief segment with you today. And, not a whole lot of pressure here because I almost never keep it brief. I love to talk about team messaging because I have been in enough practices to know that you go in the room, you say something. I go in the room as a technician and the client's like, do I really have to bathe him every single day? Or like, and I'm like, well, yeah, I mean, if he really hates it, like every other day, you know, I'm like making up the rules. And then you go up front and the receptionist, you know, the client's checking out and saying like, man, I can't believe I have to do this every day. I don't know how I'm going to do it. And client service rep just innocently says something like, well, just do your best, you know, do your best and call if you have any trouble, right? So by the end of that communication chain, they're like, I bet I could do this twice. You know, how do you get everyone on that same message with the same, you know, passion that we get those good outcomes?
In-house training. And that is key, not just for this, but for so many things. Because if we don't say the same thing throughout the practice, from the time they come in till the time they leave, you've created non-compliance. So I think you're spot on. It's one of those challenges that when I first started in a practice, the veterinarian that I worked for said to all the technicians, and me included, because I was a newbie, he said, I don't want you saying anything that you haven't heard me say. And the point was, I want to be consistent. Now, what he also said was, if I'm wrong, I want to know it. But it made it very clear that we needed to be very uniform throughout. We all know about training dogs. The two C's of training dogs is you've got to be consistent and constant. So you got to say the same thing every time. And every time it comes up, you got to do this. That one thing. It's no different here with our clients. So we, from beginning to middle to end, we need to be saying the same thing because we all have the same goal, and that is to help that pet owner and their pet get better.
I love that sentiment. That's exactly right. When it comes to derm, all I know is that these are uncomfortable, miserable dogs that, and some cats, like you said, that fully deserve the best care we can give them. And you're right. It's education. It's education from the front to the back. And it really brings that, you know, conversation full circle, right? Because in industry, in private practice, in specialty, wherever we are, we need to stay up to date, doing the best that we can, and understanding that there's always something out there to learn. And the people in your practice probably want to know it the most.
That's for sure. And it makes it easier too for this last little part we've been talking about. If you do what is called a streamlined shelf, because we've all gone into our pharmacy and looked up at this plethora of shampoos and skin products and wondered, which one should I grab? Well, I used this one yesterday, I'll grab this one today. Or I don't know what the difference between these are. There is a very simple way of streamlining that shelf so that we can have that consistent message. If we think about it in four categories, we think about it as cleaning, grooming, allergy, inflammation, infection, and seborrhea, we can get products specifically in there. One product in each category, and in some cases, the same product can cover two of those categories. We can make it simpler, not only for us, but for our clients, for the front desk. That streamlined shelf makes a huge difference.
I love that you said that too. You're right, because we get tons wrapped up in inventory. It causes confusion. And, you know, sometimes we just don't know the best product to reach for. I think that we could talk derm over and over and all day, because you bring up so many good points between, you know, the support staff, the client themselves, our patient, and us. There's a lot of education to be done. There's a lot of fast, rapidly changing things to learn about. And I think it's something that we can just continue consuming over and over again, which I know we're going to do in a couple more podcasts on this series. So I look forward to those continued conversations. And Dr. Dan Carey, I want to thank you for your time today.
Well, thank you, Becky. This has been a delight. I appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you again to Elanco's DVM Dermatology Portfolio for sponsoring today's episode.
Thanks again to today's guest for joining us, and thanks to you for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, you can find us wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. While you're there, make sure you subscribe, rate, and review. We appreciate if you leave us all the stars. You can listen to podcasts as well on our website at cliniciansbrief.com/podcasts. You can find us at facebook.com/cliniciansbrief, on Twitter at cliniciansbrief, and on Instagram at clinicians.brief. You can also drop us a line at podcast@briefmedia.com. Clinician's Brief, the podcast, is a Brief Media production, produced by Alexis Ustry, sound by Randall Stupka, hosted by me, Becky Mosser, with special thanks to production assistant Michelle Monkrez.